Hello, everyone, and welcome into FCC Talk. I'm your host, John Rhodes, Children's Pastor here at First Christian Church, joined today by the Worship Minister, Dan Stribling. Dan, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing great. We are recording this on Wednesday, April 3rd, and this will be released on April 5th, which just so happens to be my birthday. So technically, it will be my birthday when you listen to this, or maybe you are listening to it after my birthday, but today is not actually my birthday, but...
Well, John, let me be the first to say happy birthday.
Thank you. This releases at midnight, so I guess you would be, in fact,
the first I will be the first to have said it.
Yeah. I know Hannah's not staying up till midnight just to tell me a happy birthday. Nor do I want to be up at midnight just to hear.
Yeah, you can't have everything.
That's what I was going to say. She can stay up all she wants. I'm probably going to be asleep if she she stays up.
Maybe she'll lean over at 12:01 and whisper softly in your ear, you know, happy birthday.
She has a toddler and a 10-month-old to take care of with me. So I think both of us will be zonked out. You know, normally neither of us are really awake much after 9 o'clock nowadays.
Welcome to the life of an old person.
Yeah, loving it. Hey, I'm 30, so I'm getting there. All right, everybody, we are going to talk about some interesting news stories today. We do want to remind you that we do talk about current events, and we try to select stories that are interesting and relevant. We try to talk about them in such a way that it's not just us, you know, scolding or anything like that, but a lot of it is kind of our reactions and thinking through it. And we do stay away from politics. We know that you can get your political stuff from just about anywhere out there, and that's not what we want to try to make this podcast about. So but we do offer ministry insights, and you know, it's not really a sermon, but it is stuff that you know, we might mention the Bible here and there and stuff like that, but it's just more casual conversation that we hope that you enjoy and will be uplifting for you this week. So ready to do it, Dan?
Let's go.
All right. So our very first story is about Dennis Quaid, the actor Dennis Quaid. He was in that movie. We've talked about it a couple times on here, that baseball movie. I'm wishing I could remember the name of
that
movie.
Was it The Rookie? Or was it Field of Dreams?
No, it was the new Christian baseball movie, the boy with the legs that weren't working, and he was the father that was the preacher. I can't remember the name of it. I'll look it up and I'll mention the name here in a minute, but we'll get on with talking about him. So essentially, Dennis Quaid has come out and kind of given his testimony a little bit. He's doing another movie here coming up, and it does have Christian influence as well. So he's getting on there and talking about just his kind of his testimony, his journey through his faith. And in his testimony, he talks about how a Sunday school teacher chastised him when he was a young boy for forgetting his quarter for the offering plate, and how that really just kind of turned him off from the subject matter turned me off. He said, there are probably some things too. I started asking questions that didn't have answers. I started to question my faith. So a Sunday school teacher simply chastising him for not having his quarter, which I never do that in Kids Zone, but I can understand, you know, hey, bring your quarter or something like that, I suppose. But apparently that was kind of the thing that made him question faith a little bit more. And so he kind of had a hard time coming back to faith. He got himself caught up in a number of things, drugs, trying to get sober, all different kinds of things that that he felt like his life was going toward. And then obviously at the end, he comes back and says that he has come back to faith now. And one of the most important reasons of why he has is because of what he did learn as a child. So it's interesting, this kind of full circle moment we get from Dennis Quaid saying, I started kind of having questions about faith as a child, but then I came back to remembering what I learned as a child. And now he said he reads through the Bible quite frequently, and it helps strengthen his faith. So, you know, Dan, my question to you is, what lessons can we glean from Dennis Quaid's testimony that it was his childhood that made himself distance from God, but it was also ultimately also what brought him back?
Yeah, actually, it's an interesting story because he's not alone. I've personally known a number of people who have had similar stories to this, maybe not necessarily being shot down by a Sunday school teacher for forgetting the offering, but, you know, other things that happened throughout the years, you know, certain events that might cause someone to become disenfranchised. And it's usually being disenfranchised with the church, the organization of the church, rather than necessarily being disenfranchised with God himself. But let's face it, God has chosen to make the church his vessel on this earth. And so it's really hard to separate the two. As much as, you know, we'd like to not feel this way, we are ambassadors of Christ, right? And so how we conduct ourselves and how we lead the church plays into how people will perceive God, which when you really start to chew on that, man, that's pretty heavy stuff. There's a lot of responsibility there. But I really think that there's two primary lessons from his story that I gleaned. And the first one of those lessons is never underestimate the power of a negative interaction. Okay. You never know when working with, and I'm going to specifically mention young people here, because I think that goes for people of any age, but we see it specifically with young people. You know, you never know what is going to be the thing that sticks in someone's mind. Right. And so for a young Dennis Quaid, he had this one, and we don't know the background. We have these few words, right, but it could have been that maybe he suffered some kind of embarrassment in front of his class for getting his quarter for Sunday school. It seems like such a small thing, but the impact emotionally that can have on a young person, that can stick with you, you know? And unfortunately, what that did in his life was plant a bad seed, okay? Now, I don't think, we're human. You know, we're going to have conflicts. We're not always, working in children's ministry, see, this is why we need people like you, because I couldn't do that. Because after about 3 weeks of that, the children would hate me because I would just be angry all the time with them, okay? I much prefer to work with adults. I love the kids. I really do. But, you know, everybody's wired differently, right? And so if Dan was the Sunday school teacher that week rather than, you know, Mrs. Smith or whoever the nicest person is, I might have said something stupid, okay? So these kind of things do happen, but we should just keep in mind that when we're working with people in church, that there's a lot of power in a negative interaction, you know? I think of positive interactions are more like drops in a bucket. You know, there's something that needs to be consistent. When somebody's coming to church, especially a person who's young in their faith, they need to have a consistent string of positive encounters with Christians and with Christ, okay? And those are like drops in a bucket that fill up over time till eventually that person is overflowing, okay? That will happen eventually. Whereas, you know, negative experiences poke holes in that bucket, and it makes it a lot harder for somebody to be filled up when they've got this one or two or three really nagging experiences which are causing them to be drained. So that's a huge lesson there. The second lesson, though, which is honestly maybe more poignant than the first, is that there is also incredible power in children's ministry, you know, and in the power of parents teaching our kids, the power of parents taking our kids to church, letting them learn about God, building a foundation in Christ, and having this knowledge embedded in our kids when they're young. Okay. It reminds me of the famous proverb, you know, train a child up in the way that they should go, and when they've grown, they won't depart from it. Well, that's a proverb. It's not a guarantee saying that any kid that's raised in the church, is not going to be tempted and fall away or have struggle or anything like that. It's not a guarantee, but it's a proverb saying, hey, you want to leverage things in the child's favor, teach them what they need to know. And that, and that's, to me, is the biggest thing about Dennis Quaid, because there are a jillion things which tempt us when we're young and that can draw us away and that can cause us to stray. And I mean, the pitfalls are endless, but there is this consistent thread that I've seen in people I've known personally that Dennis Quaid has alluded to here in his own life, that if you teach a child, if you lay a strong foundation for them in truth, that will create a pathway back when they are older, or at least it certainly can, and it oftentimes does. And I think that is an even more poignant lesson than, you know, just walking on eggshells trying to avoid the negativity. Parents, teach your kids. It's super vital.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself, man. You know,
sorry, I went on a rant there.
I loved it. And I was going to talk about like the importance of children's ministry and, you know, how things can stick with people all the way until they get older. But I mean, you nailed it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a number of people that I have met in my life who have told me that, you know, well, my grandmother took me to church as a child. And mm-hmm. even though it was mm-hmm. just sitting in the service, I don't remember maybe a thing that was ever preached, but I remember being there. I remember my grandmother being faithful, and I remember my grandmother caring about me always. And like that was the positive influence that they would have, is not just so much that, you know, oh, I learned a lesson, but that they were treated well and that they were cared for, and that eventually someday when they stopped going, they missed it. And just how important mm-hmm. that is yeah. for kids to have those things. Now, obviously I'm biased. I think kids ministry is a good option and that kids will go mm-hmm. there and learn and, you know, grow in their faith. But at the same time, just having a kid in church at all, having them make good interactions with other people and having them enjoy their time being there and seeing other spiritual or other believers, you know, interact with them. It's all just positive yeah. and helps them even later in life, because let's face it, everybody's going to hit rock bottom at some point. And it's at those times when you hit rock bottom where you truly decide what am I going to make of my life? Am I going to, you know, follow God? Am I going to give up to mm-hmm. the you know, God and the spiritual realm around me and those things? Or am I mm-hmm. going to do my own thing? Am I going to make my own path? Am I going to find whatever I need to numb the pain of what I'm going through that I choose?
Right.
I think that when people have a positive interaction with church at a young age, it's more likely that they will find that desire to God and through the church. So
that's right.
Another thing that Dennis Quaid mentioned that I want to read a quote. It says, Dennis Quaid says here, "I think there's a spiritual awakening actually going on in our country right now." He said, "There's been a lot of turmoil, and that's what spiritual awakening looks like because of what it takes to get there. I think we're right at the beginning of it." Interesting mm-hmm. thought there. Dennis also shares that his yeah. favorite book of the Bible is Ecclesiastes. He also shares the book of John that he loves to read. Mm-hmm. you know, he talks about Hollywood. He talks about the world. What are your thoughts on Quaid's assessment of the spiritual awakening that he's kind of talking about in Hollywood and in the world that he's discussing in this article?
Well, I certainly think he might be onto something. You know, I mean, I can't see through his eyes, so I don't know exactly what it is that he's seeing. But, you know, I'm going to say kind of agree, because what I see is we live in a culture that is not even gradually, but rapidly disassociating itself from spirituality and from God. And what I'm seeing is a tremendous increase in people's hunger for things that only God can provide. Okay. Questions like identity and fulfillment, you know, existential questions like, what is my purpose of being here? I've seen so many videos, you know, Facebook reels, YouTube shorts of people talking like, you know, young people like, I just got out of college and, you know, I guess now I have to work until I die, or I can't find a job, or I'm not making what I thought I would in my life, you know, and all this kind of stuff, like these existential things that people are dealing with. That kind of stuff can only be answered truly in a relationship with God. And so we've got a lot of people out there that are seeking. He also makes the comment that there's a lot of desire for spiritually driven storytelling in films right now, which that's definitely true. We have seen an incredible rise in the popularity of what I guess you could call like Christian cinema or something like that. It's basically, you know, Christian themed entertainment is what I call it. But as Americans, we consume most of our information through entertainment. I hate to say that, but it's the truth. And so seeing that there's this greater desire for Christian entertainment, yeah, there's just, I think there's a greater hunger, but I don't know if it's incredibly widespread or if it's just really intense in a smaller segment of people. It's really kind of hard for me to say, but I tell you what, I sure hope we're on the cusp of a spiritual revival. God never stops working. God never stops working. But there's some interesting pockets of things going on right now too. So I'm still working through that myself.
Yeah, I think that Quaid makes some good points. And I think that, you know, the part that you brought up about the Christian media and storytelling and things like that out there, there is definitely a greater hunger for that. And I think that definitely. It sounds like he's hopeful that as that hunger continues, it will be fed and people will be more apt to, you know, understanding God and, you know, obviously coming to him more in their lives. And so I think that if that does happen, then we will see more of that. We've talked, I think, with Chris a couple times about the growing Christian media that's out there. You've kind of seen the music industry go down and how it's been swayed by Christianity over the years. You have a lot of worship bands out there, but you don't have quite as many maybe Christian bands as you once have had, as I'm sure you're aware more than anybody else. With
how much it's become very narrow. The music industry is very narrow.
Right. And I think that right now we're kind of seeing the movie industry change in a similar way that we saw the Christian or the music industry change, with Christian music coming out that's not necessarily worship songs, but it does have Christian influence. And so we're seeing movies come out with guys like Dennis Quaid in them, who it's not like the most, you know, gooey, you know, religious movie out there, but it does have religious elements to it. So you can watch it and you know that this is something that has religious elements to it, but there's still parts of it that might, you know, maybe be PG rated because
they're trying to make
it real life, you know?
So
I don't know where people stand on that, if they like that or if they dislike that, but I do think there is a greater hunger for some of that media in our world today. Otherwise they wouldn't be making it.
Sure.
So,
well, and I think that there's a great desire for it. And I think that, you know, Hollywood's missing out. Actually, no, Hollywood can stay the heck out of Christian cinema as far as I'm concerned. But I do think that there's a tremendous opportunity there for people that want to step up. And, you know, it's a good opportunity to do some good ministry, I think.
I agree. All right. Well, Dan, that was some good discussion there about that. We're going to move on to another topic. This one's not as positive, unfortunately, but I guess we'll talk about it. So. A well-known celebrity pastor, I guess you would call him. I don't really like that term, but you know, when you're known as well as some of these guys are, I think that's kind of what you have to refer to them as. But T.D. Jakes, he is the pastor at the Potter's House in Dallas, Texas, very large church. And his friend, Sean Diddy Combs, he has obviously been involved with a lawsuit. I'm sure many people have heard of that. I don't follow it super close, and that's not what this video is going to be about. We're not going to be talking about the lawsuit very much, but we are going to be talking about T.D. Jakes mentioned. Yeah, it's gross. And that's kind of what you find in a lot of these celebrity lawsuits that are going on kind of nowadays. You had the Epstein stuff, and now you have this. But the thing that makes this a little bit interesting is that T.D. Jakes himself was mentioned in the lawsuit. And obviously, when this kind of stuff happens, you have a lot of people that are mentioned, whether it be as somebody who was involved in what was going on, or they're a witness, or whatever it might be. The reports are is that T.D. Jakes was not involved in any of the nefarious acts, but he may have witnessed some of them. We don't exactly know. The court case is still ongoing and things like that. But at the end of the day, him just being mentioned himself, a pastor, very well-known pastor. I mean, this is a prominent pastor. What was kind of your reaction when you saw that this happened, Dan?
Not very surprised. I mean, first off, there's not a whole lot to go on here. I mean, to me, I read up a little bit on this and I read a little bit up on the lawsuit. And, you know, T.D. Jakes knows a lot of people. You know, he's a pastor of a mega church, and he's also a very outspoken prosperity gospel preacher as well.
Yep.
Hang on just a minute, buddy. Be out in a few minutes. I have a visitor. But he's also a very well-known prosperity gospel preacher as well. And to these guys whose lifestyle revolves around wealth and opulence, it also revolves around status and connections. And so T.D. Jakes, his entire relationship with, what is the guy's actual name, Sean Combs or something? I never got into Diddy whatsoever because I only listen to people with discernible talent. So I kept my distance from Diddy. But for a guy like T.D. Jakes, you know, it would probably socially benefit him to have some kind of alignment with a guy like Diddy. And so for all we know, their relationship was, in the article, it was mentioned like T.D. Jakes went over to his house and shot a video and then left, you know, like it was like a birthday video or something, like nothing nefarious. There were witnesses. So I don't know. I wasn't really surprised because it wouldn't surprise me they're connected, but it's not like he's really being accused of anything either from the looks of things. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I've done a little bit of listening to other YouTube videos talk about it and, you know, reading up on it some more. A lot of gossip around it. You know,
I think he
put out a video talking about how he has been to some Diddy parties, but at the Diddy parties, you knew that the worst stuff that you didn't want to see was starting at like 1 a.m. or something like that.
And by the way, that is standard practice in the entertainment industry. If you Christian artist, non-Christian artist, you know who's throwing what kind of parties, you know whether or not you have to be there because oftentimes you have to show your face. You also know what's going to be going on. And I've heard of Christian artists over the years that have been able to navigate that landscape, probably like Lecrae was able to, and know when he needed to blow out of there because the stuff was about to happen, you know. And then there's others that I've heard of that have been sucked into that because of the exposure to it. So unfortunately, it's one of those dark, ugly corners of the entertainment industry. But it's not like Lecrae was specifically putting himself in a bad situation. This is just standard practice in the entertainment industry.
Yeah. No, thanks. Thank you for saying that. That's an important piece to know as well, because we don't want to make people think that Lecrae was somehow involved in all this stuff.
I just think that at this point.
Mm-hmm. Right. I just mentioned him because he was one of the people that put out like an Instagram live or whatever. I didn't actually see it, but I saw somebody else play the replay of it, and you know, he was just talking about that, and kind of his point was like, he could have been, you know, he saying about T.D. Jakes, like he could have been like me and just maybe for whatever reason he stayed longer at the parties but didn't stay the whole time or something. You know, he was saying T.D. Jakes could be completely innocent in this, and maybe Diddy is trying to use him for some kind of, you know, better PR or something like that. Like, hey, my pastor, like, you know, we weren't doing anything bad.
Exactly. That was even mentioned in the notes of the lawsuit, that Diddy made some statement about attempting to utilize his relationship with T.D. Jakes to improve his public image, you know. And that's, once again, something we hear about very often in high status circles, is people using the influence of another for their own personal benefit.
Right. I guess let me ask you this, Dan. I didn't put this question down to ask, but our conversation has led me to it. You know, obviously there have been other pastors like, was it Carl Lentz was close with Justin Bieber.
Yeah, Lentz, yeah.
There was Judas Smith. I think he was close with Bieber as well. And so you kind of see some of these celebrity pastors creating forms or bonds and relationships with other celebrities and trying to bring them to Christ. It kind of relates to our lives as well, because everybody wants to be evangelistic and, you know, share Christ with other
people.
Mm-hmm. At what point do you think that maybe the pastors need to be a little more guarded so that way they're not connected with some of this stuff? But at the same time, I mean, as a pastor yourself, you are, I'm sure, as I am, trying to make sure you're not in bad situations, but you're also close enough with people to where you can speak in their lives and be with them. You know what I'm saying? So obviously you and I are nowhere near the level of T.D. Jakes and, you know, going to Diddy parties or anything like that. But maybe just speak on for a minute what you try to do with staying guarded, but also being a witness to those that may not know Christ.
Well, the best person to look for to know how to do that was Jesus. One of the most impressive things, you know, the more that I read the Gospels and the more that I really study the life of Christ, the more that I see just how extraordinary and extraordinary he was at dealing with people. You know, Jesus had the ability and the discernment and the self-control and everything to be able to, you know, be right there with people that were locked into really sinful lifestyles, but he never succumbed to what they did. He never succumbed to the right. temptation. I saw a really gross thing posted the other day that said something to the effect of be like Jesus and party with sinners. That is so gross to me because that implies that Jesus came down to the same level as the people that he was trying to elevate. Okay. Jesus calls us above the things that are holding us away from our relationship with God. It's not like, you know, his association means that he was participating in what they were doing. I thought of Ephesians chapter 5, starting in verse 11, when I think about this topic, where it says, take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. You know, under no circumstance, whoever we're dealing with, are we supposed to be participating in the evil things? You know, I all the examples that are coming to my mind are kind of explicit, but, you know,
I think I know what you mean, though. Like, if you think back to like, when was Jesus with sinners, right? I think, you know, that,
right.
Let's go back to that quote, be like Jesus, party with sinners. That's not what Jesus did. Jesus didn't go to be involved in what they were involved in. When he went to go be with Zacchaeus, he went to Zacchaeus' house to minister to him. And yes, there were many there, but he wasn't like, hey, Zacchaeus, make sure you open a few bottles before I get there so I can partake, and then I'll tell you about God. You
right.
know, like, it's not right, like that's what he was trying to do. Or even, you know, the Lord's Supper when he was there with Judas. He knew that Judas was going to betray him, and he knew that that was going to happen, but he still decided to be with Judas and show him love and try to, you know, show him grace in that situation by still being there, taking communion and things like that. So, at the end of the day, yes, Jesus was with sinners, but he also guarded himself to make sure that he was very intentional about when he was with them, that he was there for a purpose, and the purpose was meant to be fruitful, like you pointed out.
That's right. Well, and what did Jesus do too? He was in constant prayer. He gave us the example of being in constant prayer in connection with the Father. He surrounded himself with a close-knit group of disciples, friends, people that were of like mind, that, you know, were there to support him personally. I mean, Jesus was definitely the leader, but even Jesus was not a complete lone wolf. He built himself a very strong social structure that was able to support him through his time of ministry. So there's a million lessons that we can learn from Christ, but where exactly is that line? Man, that so depends on who you are and who it is that you're dealing with. And that is something that I think you need to, just like the Bible says, to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. I think that that line is something you need to take to the Lord in prayer with fear and trembling, because we're called to minister, but we cannot let the darkness in. So it is definitely, you know, we got to think about
ask for wisdom when we're in those situations as well. You know,
absolutely.
To be trying to minister to somebody, you know, God, give me wisdom to say the right things and know my boundaries and, you know, what was it, guardrails, Chris preached about a few years ago, you know, where are my guardrails?
That's right.
You know, making sure I stay in those lines. So yeah, all right. Like I said, not the most positive story in the world, but something that I think that there's some things to learn there and some good discussion points. Dan, our last story, oh boy. Richard Dawkins.
You've heard of him, right? I know, apologetics. I've read a thing or two about Dawkins over the years.
Yeah, so Dawkins came out. I think he's living in the UK. Am I right, Dan? Do you remember?
I believe he's from the UK. I believe he's at the very least. I believe he is English. He's British. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, Richard Dawkins came out and called himself a cultural Christian. I was very intrigued by what that meant. So I obviously went to the article.
This is so hilariously frustrating.
Yes. And started figuring out, like, because we've talked about celebrities before and how they come. We've talked about CJ Stroud. We talked about the Ravens coach. We talked about, who's the music artist? The country singer guy. I forget what his name is, but we talked about him. And so we talk about Richard Dawkins now, who if comes out and says he's a cultural Christian, it's like, wow, great. You've taken one of the atheists and now he's a Christian. Not so much.
Yeah, not quite.
His quote is, I call myself a cultural Christian, Dawkins said. I am not a believer, but there's a distinction between being a believing Christian and being a cultural Christian, and so I love hymns and Christmas carols and sort of feel at home in the Christian ethos, which that sounds not bad, right? I feel like we are in a Christian country. We are a Christian country, talking about the UK, in that sense. Statistically, the number of people who actually believe in Christianity is going down, and I'm happy about that. Wow. A lot of twists and turns there. Dan, oftentimes when we have somebody come to faith, we say this is a win, this is great, but I don't know if Dawkins has really actually come to faith. What are your thoughts here, Dan?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts. This frustrates me to no end, because basically what Dawkins says in this article, first off, he is a good traditional Englishman. And so what he is basically saying is that he enjoys the benefits of having grown up in a country that was primarily influenced by Christianity. In other words, I think that Dawkins sees a tremendous value in what we used to call a lot the Judeo-Christian ethic. In other words, the ethics of Judaism and Christianity, you know, that come from the scriptures. He sees the value in those. However, this Richard Dawkins is not just an atheist. When you begin to read and hear him speak, this is a man who absolutely hates God. We're talking like loathes the very idea of God, not just, oh, I'm scientifically convinced. Like there is an animosity present in his arguments and a great deal of hypocrisy, dare I say, as well in a lot of what Richard Dawkins says. For example, Richard Dawkins is more than willing to admit that he enjoys the benefits of living in a Christian society, and yet he would be very happy to see the very thing that created his beneficial society go away. He also mentions in this article Islam and sees Christianity as kind of the polar opposite to Islam. And in that, I don't necessarily disagree, and he has a lot of problems with Islam and would rather see Christianity win. Once again, he wants to enjoy all the benefits of living in a Christian society without actually having to step up and be a Christian himself. You know, that
which makes
very hypocritical to me. It makes no sense.
Because the ultimate Christian society is obviously heaven, correct?
That's right.
So that's the thing. It's like, I'm not trying to laugh at Richard Dawkins here. I'm with you where it's like, it's so frustrating. It kind of makes me laugh in disbelief that like, okay, you enjoy the society that Christianity has built or that God's people has built, however you want to frame it.
Mm-hmm. However, and he's watching that disintegrate. That's where this comes from. He's watching his England disintegrate.
But the thought process for him, no, you're fine. The thought process for him is that he wants nothing to do about with his eternity being in the society that he enjoys. You know, like he wants to live in a society that is ruled by God, that where God is not worshiped. And that just doesn't work.
It doesn't work. But you got to consider too, and here's the lesson for each one of us normies who is reading this article and maybe listening to this podcast. Richard Dawkins is a man who hates God. Okay. Right. Richard Dawkins has been so blinded by his hatred of God that he is able to reconcile in his mind the goodness of what God and God's ethic and God's influence on humanity has accomplished, but at the same time, still hate him and think it's a good thing to see him diminished. When what he doesn't realize is that the diminishing of the God that he fought so hard against for so many years will destroy the very thing that he says he values. So the lesson here for us normal people is don't let your hate blind you to the obvious reality that is staring you in the face. We all struggle with this. This is human tendency. It's just we see this kind of magnified in this article with Richard Dawkins. But anger is incredibly powerful, and our emotional capacity to hold on to that real vitriolic anger inside of us can keep us from seeing the blatant truth right in front of our face. So
it's incredible, not incredible in a good way. It's just incredibly crazy.
It makes me sad, man. Like it really makes me sad, because really Dawkins is like two steps away from the Lord, but he just can't see it. And
right,
we should all pray for him.
Yes, we should. That was the part that I was going to bring up next, is how, you know, he can consider himself this cultural Christian, but not a believer. And he makes this distinction between the two, that he doesn't believe in God, but he enjoys the fruits of God's society and what he has. And I have to say, I don't think that there are many people on this level with him, but I do think that this kind of thinking is perhaps more common than people realize. And I think that there are more people like this in the church. I'm not saying our church, but in kind of like the church overall, than maybe sometimes we realize, that there are people who maybe don't want anything to do with God, but they enjoy the society that God has created. They like,
oh my gosh,
the idea that's
our society, man. That is right. Our society. I was gonna say, we live in this society.
How much do you see that in the American society today? Because I know it's become more prevalent in the UK society from reading some stuff from people. I forget who the British guy I like is. I forget his name. I have a number of books from him. I'll try to remember. But anyway, I mean, how much do you see that in our American society today as well?
Everywhere. It's extremely prominent. I'm trying to think of some good examples. One of the biggest ones that I could think of, you know, the one of the big narratives right now, one of the big narrative lies is that, oh, Christianity is so destructive. Every single society that Christianity goes into becomes oppressive and people suffer and it's fascist and blah, 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 blah. 90%+ of the world's greatest benevolent organizations were started in the name of Christ. Now, many of them have since been co-opted, but do you ever realize how many hospitals have the name Methodist or St. Peter's or something like that in them? It's because it is traditionally embedded in Christian ethics to care about your fellow man. It is mandated by Scripture. And so, charitable organizations, the Salvation Army, the Red Cross, lots of organizations have their roots in faith. And so, but people, we as people, I'm going to put myself in this because I'm a part of this culture. We as a society despise what we perceive as the rules that God puts on us so much that we want to just rebel and, you know, go against it. But we still want to enjoy all of the benefits of, you know, selflessness and love and everything. But if we burn our relationship with God, we're going to burn all the effects that he's worked through us as well. And it's a darn shame.
It is. And I was going to bring up the same point about the hospitals and even, you know, higher education. Like, look at
the Ivy League schools, right?
They were all started with the intent of greater education and, you know, having people who are smarter in our society and making a way for them to do well for our society. And obviously that's got a little bit of a different way in college nowadays. Yes, however,
yeah.
However, at the end of the day, many of the things that you see in our society that are still prevalent and that started and are, you know, tenets of our society came from Christianity, came from Christians, because, mm-hmm. like you said, they care about other people and they're selfless, and that's what we're called to. And I think it's a good reminder for all of us as Christians that we don't just mm-hmm. look and say, our society needs to be more Christian, or our society needs to have more Christian influence, but then also mm-hmm. not hear that in our own lives as well. Yeah. How can I contribute to that society by being close to God myself, and mm-hmm. then also, yep. you know, being in the society in such a way that is giving and selfless and helpful to other people as well. Yep. You know,
the vast majority of homeless shelters are yep. started and funded by churches.
I remember when I was
relief organization, you know, yeah, food relief organizations, soup kitchens, community food banks. These are almost always. You won't see a community food bank that's supported by your local mosque. You know what I mean? It's very, very uncommon.
Right. When I was in Virginia, we had a homeless shelter for men there. And the obviously it was rather difficult for some people to find jobs and things like that. And so they would mm-hmm. stay for a certain amount of time at the homeless shelter.
Yep.
And they not only would house them, but they would also, you know, have them go out and find jobs and things like that, because they only stayed there for so long. And I remember talking to one of the men who was there. I think he was there for like his fourth time or something like that. And he was getting ready to be kicked out again. And because the whole reason they kick people out is so that way they have a little bit more, like, I need to get a job so I'd actually find a place to live, so I'm not just staying mm-hmm. here all the time, because if they didn't do that, that's what they would do. And, I remember talking with him, and he would say, yeah, I really like this place. The people are nice and they're pretty selfless, and, you know, I feel like they care about me. He said, but if they could just not kick me out and not be so mean to me and get rid of me, you know, that'd be really, really nice of them. And I just sat there kind of puzzled. I was like, I get that. Like, I get you not wanting to be kicked out, but like, at the same time, you just talked about how nice they were and how much they care about you.
Yeah.
Like, it's sometimes if we have those blinders on, like you're talking about, not seeing what's directly in front of us, which is helping you, so that way you can contribute to society in such a way that you have a job and you can then also build yourself up and possibly care for people in the future, like people have cared for you. And you know, I'm not complaining about homelessness here or anything like that. I'm just saying that's one area where I've seen where people say, you know, I appreciate what Christians do, but they also can be a little mean in this one area. And I don't like that.
Yes. But, and what really is the root of a lot of this too. Like when you look at the example of the guy you were just talking about, or even when we look at a guy like Richard Dawkins, you know, the motivation, which it is selfishness, you know. And one of the greatest things that we are called to in the scriptures is to be selfless. You know, we're to be God focused rather than self focused. And if we're God focused, we'll be outwardly focused. Whereas if we're not, we're inwardly focused. You know, I think of, you know, the guy in the homeless shelter you were just talking about. You know, I love this place. Everybody's really, really nice. But what I want is I want to be able to stay here and have all my needs met. That's what I desire. And so when they go against what I desire, all of a sudden, everything's terrible. We as Americans, right? You know, yeah, we love the benefits of what God's done for our society, but you know what? We don't want to follow your rules. We want what's best for us. We're selfish. And so, you know, that's going to be our blocker. You're Richard Dawkins. You know, yeah, I see all the wonderful impacts that Christianity's had in my culture. I even consider myself a cultural Christian, but I don't want to have to believe in God. I don't want to accept that he is who he says he is. And so I'm not going to do it. You know, it all comes back to this focus on self rather than focus on God. So I think there's another strong lesson to learn there through what he's talking about. It's like, look up before you look in, you know, keep the focus in the right place. That's how we'll have the right perspective.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's a great way to end that discussion.
That's so good to know.
That's, That was fantastic. I feel like we learned some good lessons in this one today. We appreciate everybody who is listening. And Dan, we obviously appreciate your time coming on here and talking about these news stories and, you know, relating them to our lives as well. Dan, do you have anything coming up in the worship ministry or anything? Obviously, we just had Easter. I know that was a big, big.
Yeah, thing, that was pretty awesome. That went really well.
It was a great, great three services. You did a wonderful job. Is there anything coming up that you want anybody to know about or anything that you're thinking about you want people to be aware of?
Specific events? No. I mean, we are looking for some technical folks to help fill some gaps behind the scenes. So if anybody listening to this podcast or if you're watching this video on YouTube, I know some of my team checks out this podcast. So if that's one of you, thank you. You're awesome. But if you're looking for a place to, yeah, if you're looking for a place to serve at the church, we could just use some help filling in some gaps behind the scenes. You don't even have to get up on the stage, you know, and all of the positions are very, very trainable. And if that's something that would interest you, you know, just reach out to us, let me know, and I'd love to get you plugged in or talk to you about it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And that's about it. Yeah.
Sometimes it's as simple as just moving a slider or pressing a button.
You would be surprised how simple some of the things that need to be done back there are. You know, everybody gets really into, oh my gosh, look at all these faders. Guess what? You need to know one of them. And all you have to do is move it at the right time. That's it. You know,
if you can do this,
you can do this for lights. you are my guy. Or gal or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. All right. Well, hey, we'll get you out of here, Dan. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. Thank you, everybody who is listening. Have a great weekend.
All right. Later.